I say it all the time, but it's good to be in a place where God is. It's good to be in a place where God is. Things happen. Miracles take place. Healings take place. People's thoughts change when they're in the presence of God. What used to seem important doesn't seem important anymore. If you'll turn in your Bibles with me today, let's go to the book of 2 Samuel. A real familiar part of David's life, but one that I want to use as a backdrop to this second part of understanding servanthood, or understanding how to be a servant for God. We talked about last week in our studies a little bit about that God has made every single one of us to be servants. We were designed, built to serve. That's what our ability is. That's what we were called to do. The happiest you'll ever be in your life is when you are serving. Now, God has shaped every one of us differently. Not one of us in this room are alike. Some of us are bigger talkers. Some of us don't like talking at all. Some of us sing. Some of us can't sing a lick. Every one of us in here are given diversities of gifts and talents and abilities, and yours are no less or no more than anyone else's. We are all part of the same body, and yet just having differences in us. And so understand that. Don't look at someone else and say, man, I wish I could do it like that. You'll get frustrated in your life if you do that, because there's a lot of people, I wish I could preach like them, or I wish I could sing like them, or I wish I could do that, or I wish I could go there. I wish you will spend your whole life wishing, but God has perfectly designed you to accomplish everything that He wants. Everything. He just needs you to use your heart, your abilities, your personality, your experiences, and the spiritual gifts He's put in your life to get it done. Now, having said that from last week, moving into this week, I need us to understand the vital signs of someone who is serving, really serving. What does it look like? What are the vital signs of someone who is really serving God? Because we can talk ourselves into think we're doing pretty good, or we're pretty good people. But there are things and ways in which we can determine whether vital signs are actually working. Now, just to go back and understand how important being a servant is, anytime you read any of the writings of the New Testament, you will find that Peter calls himself a servant. You will find that Paul calls himself a servant. In James, the first chapter, he calls himself a servant. In fact, Jesus said, I did not come to be served, but to serve. And Paul would later reiterate that about him. It said that he thought it not robbery to make himself lower and to take on the form of a servant to do the work that God has called him to do. So you're going to have to get that in your mind, that you are called to serve. You may not like serving. You may like doing stuff when you want to do it and how you like to do it. And if it gets tough, you quit. That may be your mentality, but that's not what you're called to do. You're called to serve. You're called to surrender your gifts and your talents and your abilities so God can squeeze the most out of them before you die. Because that's ultimately what's going to happen. You're going to die. And hopefully He will have squeezed everything out of you that's valuable that He put in you, so that the world can see it and say, man, God did great work through their life. Now, I've said that because as you go to 2 Samuel, the 6th chapter, I want us to cover today the vital signs of being a good servant. I use it this way because I have a watch that when I started doing P90X years ago, that was the first thing they told me to get. You need to get a heart rate monitor watch. I'd never heard of a heart rate monitor watch. I just felt like when you're about to pass out, that's when you stop. That was the way I was taught. You know, I'm hurting. I'm about to have a heart attack. Let's quit. Not all I can do. But when I started working out with them, they said, you wear that heart rate monitor watch. Because what we're wanting to do is we're wanting to get you in your zone, as they call it. We want you in the zone. Now, in the zone is not when I'm sitting on the couch eating tater chips and drinking Coke. No, that's my heart is just cruising at a very slow. What they're talking about is about 70% or 80%. Getting my heart rate up way up, and then holding it there through exercise for at least 30 to 40 minutes. So that for those 30 to 40 minutes, my heart will not go down, but it won't go over what is maximum. It'll say, check it. Are you too high? Are you too low? If you're too high, then slow down. Just take a break for a few minutes. If you're too low, then pick it up. You're going too slow. You're going to have to work out harder. I never understood that. That was totally new to me. And I was starting all of a sudden to check my wrist and check whether my heart was bumping at about 130 to 150. And if it was cruising at 130 to 150, I felt like I was passing out. But my body was saying, no, you are in the zone. You are actually burning. You are actually working. You are strengthening every part of your body. Every part is getting healthier and stronger. Your blood is pumping at maximum sufficiency. It's cruising right now. And if you can learn to live at this, you will get a lot accomplished. That's why it's so much different in what we call working muscle than working out muscle. There's a lot of us in here who have working muscle. We can take one of these young, muscle-bound little guys. We can carry him to work with us. About 4 hours, my feet hurt. In about 5 hours, my back's killing me. I've been standing on this concrete. Because they're conditioned for specific workout. You're conditioned to be able to stand on your feet, to be able to go through the whole day. And it's funny watching the comparison. They'll say, man, that old man worked me to death today. And you see this young guy, and you'll say, how can that be? How can he work you? Because he has a different type of stamina and a different type of ability that he's created in his life. Now, the four vital signs that you're going to have to check in your life are these. And David has them. David has them with spades. That's what makes him, as God said, a man after my own heart. He had these abilities and he was cruising in them. Let me give you, as we go through this, the scenario. David is wanting probably more than anything else to bring the Ark of the Covenant, which represents the power of God, back to town. Now, this Ark is carried in this little box. It's a little 3 foot, a 3 foot looking little box, and it's got all these looking weird emblems on it, and it's got all these cherubims hanging over it. And to look at it, you would think, okay, it's a gold box. But it represented the presence of God and the power of God. And David knew that and Israel knew that. And it had already been captured by the Philistines a long time before. And they had gotten cursed by that. And we don't have time to deal with all that. But let's just say because they had it in their possession, it caused them all types of problems. Finally, they just put the thing on a cart and put some cattle in front of it and said, look, just let it go. Wherever it ends up is where it ends up. We don't care if it's made of gold or what. We don't want it anymore. And it ended up at a specific house. David heard about this and said, all right. We're going to get to go and take this thing and bring it home. He goes with a cart, takes a bunch of his guys with him. Says, all right, guys, we're going to load this thing on the cart. We're going to take it back to town. And as they load it up and they're going, everything's going good. Except for one thing. They go over this one stretch of road that's very bumpy. And as they're going over this stretch of road, the ark begins to bounce in the back of the wagon. And one of the men who is standing near the back just instinctively sticks his hand out to stop it from bouncing out of the back of the wagon. Look at the person beside you and say, he wasn't doing anything wrong. He was just trying to keep it from bouncing out the back of the wagon. But when he touched it, he broke one of the laws and one of the rules that God had said. Nobody touches this box. And the Bible says as soon as that happened, God grew angry immediately and slew him right there. He just died. David and everybody stop and they say, okay, we need to put this thing somewhere. We don't want it in town. I mean, we do not want this thing in town because look at it, people get killed. They come by looking at this thing and accidentally touch it. They'll die. Point number one, when you are going to check your vital signs to see if you are the servant you need to be, the very first vital sign is your spiritual unity. Look at the person beside you and say, it begins with spiritual unity. So you think servanthood begins with having a job or having a position or having a place in the church, or having something that you're supposed to do. No. Anytime it's servanthood, it always is about Serving. So it has nothing to do with you, but has to do with everybody else. You are the least important person in the room. You are the least important. I think that's why God put me in the grocery business all those years ago, because the very first rule they teach you when years ago, I know they probably don't now, but years ago when you walked in, they said, the manager would look at you and he would say it very plainly. He said, look, the customer is always right. Yeah, but they cussed me out. I don't care. The customer is always right. But you don't understand, I ain't got to put up with that. Then quit. Because the customer is a lot more important to me than you. I got a stack of applications that I can hire another teenager any minute. But I won't want to lose that customer. So just get it in your head. They're always right. No matter what they said, no matter what they did, no matter what they... You treat them like gold. That's who they are. And that brought something in my mind, because all of a sudden now I would get mistreated, or I would get things said to me. And I would just about take all I could take, and I would see them coming in the door, and you know the ones that would walk in, and man, you just knew, oh, here we go again. You know, it's going to be another one of those days. But the customer is always right, because a servant understands it's not about me. It's about the unity that I bring into lives and the unity that I'm supposed to carry. Now, get it this way. Togetherness is the catalyst for everything that's going to get done. If you can find people that are pulling together, if you can find people that are praying together, if you can find people that will work together, if you can find people that will press into God together, then you are going to find people that are going to get mighty things done for God. David's problem was there was no unity when they began the process. It was just a good idea. It was just, hey, let's just take a wagon and let's go get that thing. I mean, we need to put it on the wagon, get it brought back into town. We'll figure out what we're going to do with it later. Unity doesn't work that way. Unity is built around a process of understanding that we're all working together, all have a place together, all have a job together to accomplish the greatest goal that we can accomplish together. Look at it this way. It is the spiritual power, not flesh-driven power. You're going to have to get that. Unity is not something that's man-made. It's God-made. That's why we're having so much problems in our country right now. It's not a Democratic problem or a Republican problem. Or can I tell you what our problem is? Is that years ago when we decided that God is not the most important thing anymore, then it became disunity. And I don't care who you elect, when they get up there, they're going to run into a place that they'll tell you this place is crazy. This place is all dysfunctional. This place is, I don't care who we send there. Why? Because it's built now out of disunity. It's built off of cutting a deal or doing... It's not a group of people coming together and saying, we need to do what's best for this country. They don't do that anymore. It's, hey, I need to do what's best for me, or I'll cut a deal to do what's best for you. And I'm not Republican, Democrat, I'm not any. I'm not independent, I'm not white, right wing, left wing, I'm not any of it. I'm just telling you, as a spiritual person looking at it from outside, I can tell you what the problem is. It's the problem of disunity. They all do not go there with the same goal, with the same intention, with the same purpose. They go there with their own agenda, their own book right, their own everything they want. They want to do this. One wants to be president one day. One wants to do this. And because of that, the country suffers. That's my political speech for today. It's not a flesh-driven thing. You can't just wake up one day and say, man, I'm going to be connected. God has to give you a heart and a purpose that will accomplish that. Here's the way it works. Leaders unite always behind a vision. Leaders always unite behind a vision. And when they unite behind a vision, people always unite behind leaders. That's the way it works. That's why it was so messed up at the time. You got one guy standing behind the wagon. He don't even know why he's standing back there. He's just standing back there because that's the place they put him. And all of a sudden, when it starts bouncing around, his instinct is grab the ark. Nobody told him not to grab the ark. Nobody said, I don't care what's going on. I don't care what happens. Don't you touch that thing. Let it hit the ground. We'll pick it up with sticks. Don't you touch. Nobody told him that. There's so much disunity in the process that all the people don't even know what's going on. Nobody really understands what's taking place. We just know, hey, I think David's taking a wagon down the road to pick up something, and he's supposed to be coming back to town in a few minutes. And all of a sudden now they figure out God does not like disunity. God will not bless disunity. God will not be a part of disunity. But the moment David and his leaders begin to study and figure out exactly how the ark has to be brought back, and they start to gather a plan. Oh, we got to have specific poles to carry this thing. Yes, we do. Oh, we've got to make sure that the Levites carry this. You mean nobody can carry it? Not just anybody? No. The priests have to carry this. The priests will have to be three on here and three here and three here and three here. And they will march, and when they march, it will work. It will go through because God will bless the unity. If they're all in step together, if they're all walking together, it will allow His presence to get into town. He said, not only that, but there has to be a sacrifice every six paces. Can you imagine that? One, two, three, four, five, six. And they would set it down. And they would do an offering. And they'd pick it up and they'd go six more steps, six more paces. And every six paces they would set the ark down and they would make a sacrifice and say, God is here. Because that's the way it had to be done. But notice what was taking place. It was creating unity. It was creating purpose. It was creating design. Now, David wasn't the one walking in front of the ark now. David wasn't the one important anymore. David wasn't, in fact, a very important person in the whole process. There's nowhere in the process where the king has to do this. Somebody could have said, David, really, you can just stay home. According to these writings, you really don't have any important part in this. But David's heart is to say, you know what? You're not leaving me out. It didn't say I couldn't dance. It didn't say I couldn't run around and dance while y'all bringing it. And so David takes up with the other maids and the other people. He begins to dance while they're bringing the ark into town. Look at the person beside you and say, it's unity. Let me put it to you in the process that we're talking about. If we talk about this runner's watch, if we talk about this heart rate watch, here's the thing you're going to know. That when it comes to a body, many members, I got a finger, I got toes, I got fingernails, I've got hair that even grows on top of the skin of my head. And I even got hair that grows on the top of my big toe. You say, ooh, that's gross. No, that's a good thing. That means I'm healthy. That means I'm healthy. My uncle right now doesn't have any hair from here all the way down. You know what? It's a sign that his body does not have proper blood function. He has diabetes and he's losing circulation in his life. You know what's going to happen if he loses full circulation in those legs? He ain't worried about the hair. They'll have to remove the leg from wherever the circulation stops. No, I don't mind the hair growing on my toes. I don't mind my toenails springing out. And I have to clip them every so often. Just let them keep growing. Just let everything keep going because it's unity. The whole body is functioning together. Now, I have many members. Not everything's a toenail. Not everything's a hair. Not everything is skin. Not everything. But it all works together to make up one person, which is Tim Lott, which is, in our mindset, all of us together make up the body of Christ. We make up all seasons. All of us bringing our talents. All of us bringing our abilities, all of us bringing what we're supposed to bring, and bringing it into unity, laying it down and saying, I am one part of an enormous body. I am one part, but I function inside of that. You couldn't be totally happy if I removed the toenail from your big toe. I've done it. It ruins every other part of your body. The swimming trip was over. Somebody forgot to tell me that when you put your feet in chlorine and you do that, it softens the nails real good. And it makes them a whole lot easier to pull off. And I had forgot to clip my big toenail. So it was sticking out a little further than it needed to. And when my foot slipped off the step of the ladder in the pool, guess what hung? Oh, yeah. Hey, my arm still wanted to go swimming. My leg still wanted to go swimming. My brain still wanted to go swimming. It was a beautiful day, but I didn't want to swim. Can we do anything for you? No, just leave me alone. Because I understood the mindset that if one part of the body is not functioning correctly, it ruins it for the entire body. It only takes one complainer in a church. You know how hard the rest of the body has to work just to cover all your mouth? We have to go behind every time you speak. And we have to say, look, you got to forgive them. They go brain dead every now and then. They're a part of the body, but they're not very bright. You're just going to have to understand, sometimes their mouth outruns their brain and they just get to talking. And if you have any more problems, just tell them to come see me. We have to say all that. Oh, what are we going to say? You can't cut your toe off. You just hope the toe finally understands, I'm part of the body. I need to quit kicking against the walls because it hurts the whole body. The body has many members, has diverse gifts. But operating in unity of purpose, a heartbeat inside of you simply says this. When I put this on and it shows that I have a heartbeat, you know what it says? I'm alive. I'm alive. Now, it doesn't say much more than that, but it says I'm alive. Some of you being in this room today, all it says is you're alive. It don't say a lot about you, but it does say that you're still breathing. It does say that you still have the capacity to be part of the body. And for some of us, that's as far as we get. We get to the point to where our vital sign says, yeah, I'm still alive. I'm still functioning. Point number two, though. The next vital sign becomes even more important. Now, you may be alive and you may be living, but you may not be doing very much because the second one is the spiritual intensity of the heartbeat. I have a heartbeat, so when I'm checking it, I know that I have not died while I'm working out. Okay. I feel like I'm dying, but my heart rate still says I'm alive. It's still going. I'm alive. I'm still making it. I'm still surviving. But now here's the problem. I must increase the intensity of that heart rate. Here's what intensity means, if you don't think it's a spiritual thing. It means energy of emotion, thought, and activity. How much energy you give to your thoughts, how much energy you give to your actions, how much energy you give to the very emotions that you carry around. Some of us don't give very much energy to it. Therefore, we walk around with... It takes energy to smile. It takes energy to be nice to people. It takes energy to forgive. It takes energy to have activity in your life. It takes energy to think good thoughts instead of bad thoughts. When you're standing there and you think of all the things that are not right with all seasons, that takes very little energy. I can stand in front of you and it won't take me very long to think of all the flaws in you. But it requires a lot more energy to push through those things and to look for the good. To look for the positive. To look for the things that will build up and not tear down. The things that will... And it takes enormous intensity. An intense person can accomplish something. We call it focus. You need to focus. Or here's a spiritual word that we use all the time. It's called zealousness. If you are zealous toward a good thing, that's good. In fact, the apostle said that it's good always to be impacted or touched by a good thing. To be zealously affected by it is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with finding something good and saying, man, I'm going to pour my energy, my thoughts, my efforts into that. I'm going to find something that's positive and I'm going to move with that. That's what we're called to do. I'm losing you already, aren't I? Because you've got a heart rate. But the problem is when you check that heartbeat, it's not a strong heartbeat. The smile on your face tells it's not strong. It's weak. Your thoughts says it's weak. From out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Your words speak that you are weak. I'm alive. Yes, you are alive. You are beating. But it's not strong. It requires strength, intensity to be able to overcome. Here's David's mindset. You don't think David had intensity? Here he just sees one of his friends, one of the men that he brought, killed by touching the ark. The Bible says something real powerful in that sixth chapter that sticks with me. It says that David puts it somewhere else because David that day was afraid of the Lord. I like that. There comes moments in our lives where we have to learn, I'm more afraid of Him than I am anything else in my life. I am more afraid of Him than I am what somebody else is going to say, what someone else is going to do, what's going to happen to me. I am more afraid. And David at that moment didn't have intensity, but he had it before it was over with. In fact, we find that by the end, anything, everything he did for God in that sixth chapter, he did it with intensity. It didn't matter if it danced. The Bible says he danced with all of his might. It was intense. It was fierce. He had to come out of his clothes. He had nothing but an ephod on when he was through, and his wife looking down would think, my goodness, this man's acting like he's crazy. When he finally gets the ark into town, do you know that he then blesses everybody? He feeds everybody. He doesn't just do a half-hearted measure. He says, look, we are in this thing together. We're in this thing and we're going to eat together. We're going to drink together and I'm going to bless all of you. Now I'm going home to bless my family. He is doing it with intensity, not just haphazardly, not just every now and then, but intense. Number three. Then there has to be spiritual activity. See, okay, I know I got a heartbeat. I start working out. It's intense. In fact, that's what they said on P90X when I started it. This is not your mother's workout. This is not some little 20-minute workout. This is intense. In fact, they use a phrase all the time while they're trying to encourage you, and it's simply this. Bring it! They keep saying it, oh, bring it! You're like, I'm bringing it. I'm about to die. If I bring anything else, my liver's going to come out my mouth. Come on, you can do it. It's only 10 little seconds. You can do anything for 10 seconds. No, I can't. My legs are on fire. My back gave out 3 weeks ago. I am hurting, but intent. With zealousness, you move forward. You attack it. You go. But then has to become the third thing. There has to be spiritual, actual spiritual activity in your life. Now look at it this way. When we talk about spiritual activity in the body, it is this. Your heart not only will beat, not only will it increase, but notice this now. There's a thing called the pulse. Look at the person beside you and say, your heart has a pulse. It tells what the pace of your heart is. Remember I talked about that you've got to be in the zone? What they're wanting to do is to increase the intensity in your life and to increase the activity of your life so that you remain in that zone and you grow strong. It's not just simply getting it done. It's the results that they're after. It's not just we want you to work out for an hour, for 90 days. It's what the results that we want to produce in your life. In fact, that's what they show on the pamphlets. They show the before pictures and the after pictures. They say if you will bring intensity and you will stay active and you won't quit, then here is what you can be. Here's what you can do. Here's what you can accomplish. But you have to keep the pulse going. You can't come at it half-heartedly. You can't just log a drag around inside the weight room. You've got to bring it every single time. Whether resting or working or at maximum capacity, you have a pulse. Every one of you in here. And your activity is telling everybody what your pulse rate is. God dealt with me like that yesterday. I had to spread those rocks. They put up our building for the other little bus. Only one problem, we had one big pile of gray rocks right in the middle of it that had to be spread before Elise brought the bus back last night. And I knew what God told me. He said, grab a shovel, start shoveling them rocks. Man, I'm going to shovel them rocks. So I got my shovel, I got ready. And Tom and Kenneth were working on lights and stuff here, and they had a wonderful idea. Look, call Johnny. He's got a little tractor right across the street, and yeah, I like that idea better. I called Johnny. I went across the street, got his tractor, pulled it up here, stopped it, and was helping them load the stuff that they had. When I got through with that, I went back outside, and the tractor wasn't there. I was thinking, you can't run very fast on a tractor. If somebody stole it, couldn't have gone far. But I walked back across the street, and there was Johnny's tractor up on the jack. And I knew one of the tires looked low, but it turned out that one of the valve stems in the tire had just about blew out, which means I couldn't use the tractor. And I was walking back across, and I felt bad. I was like, man, I hope I didn't tear up Johnny's tractor. I hope I didn't do it. And it was like God told me, he said, I didn't tell you to get no tractor. And the funny thing was is that I had to tell, you know, I went over and told Johnny, I said, you know, that's no problem, man, no big deal. And I told him, I said, I'll just do it with a shovel. And these were Johnny's words. And it hit me because I knew what I was preaching today. And he looked at me, you go, your P90XL. And I said, man. And it was like God saying, we're going to drive this home into you before morning. Because when I walked up that pile of rocks, at first it don't seem that bad. And you get to shoveling, and you shovel, and you shovel. And then you get tired of shoveling, you lay the shovel down, I'm going to go get something to drink. And you come back, and the rocks are still there. And it doesn't go, and you have to hit it with intensity. You can't just, well, let's just do, because rocks don't move like everything else. If you try to just move rocks, you'll pull muscles. You got to tighten up, and you got to go. You cannot play with it. You can't just throw one rock at a time. You got to bow up, as the old saying used to go when I was growing up. You got to bow up and get it. It's all there is to it. And so it was that mindset. I was sitting there thinking of this sermon and doing them rocks, and God was saying, intensity, Tim. Intensity. Stay steady. Stay consistent. And I mean, sweat pouring off of me and everything. And I'm thinking, okay, activity, Tim. Think, you've got to be active. But here's the key. Stay in the zone. Just stay steady. Don't work real hard for 2 minutes and quit. Don't get over. Just take your time. You'll get there. It's almost getting dark, God. It ain't dark yet, Tim. You'll get it done. And right at dark, I'd finished. And I looked at that, and that was the most awesome pile of rocks I'd ever seen in my life. Because I knew the intensity it took. I knew the effort that it took. I knew the activity of about 4 hours that it took to get it done. Here's the problem. Spiritual activity is given to us by God to do one thing. To show the problem in your life. See, all pastor has to do is come and ask you to do more than you're doing right now and do it humbly and in unity and give it seriousness and to be consistent. And you know what's going to happen? It increases your activity level. And it will reveal an attitude problem, a commitment problem, a love problem. All it's going to do is reveal a problem. Anytime God wants to reveal problems in me, all He has to do is give me something new to do. And increasing that in my life. If I tell you guys here, all I want you to do today is I want you to leave this room and I want you to forgive everybody. I don't want you to hold no more grudges against nobody. Man, He don't know all these folks done me wrong. He don't, because all I've done is asked you to increase your what? Your intensity and your activity. And what it is doing is it's revealing the problems in your life. It always does. Nathan, when he was sick, all it does is create in me the anxiety of the problem. And it says, now, can your heart rate, can you handle this beat? Can you stand and look at that little boy with a sore throat? Can you say, I'm going to stick with this. I'm going to believe with this. I'm going to hold this. I'm not letting go of this. It's going to test everything in you to be able to increase it. That's what working out does. That's what working out spiritually does in your life. That's why it's so hard. Because it's so much easier to go back and just do what we normally do and not try to grow and not try to become or not try to be. But if you will, allow God to increase the intensity, the activity in your life, then it does one thing. It will reveal the problems, but it will eventually cure them. See, when I first started working out, I realized something I didn't know. I was fat. No, I looked in the mirror and I said, I'm not that bad. I'm not that bad. I mean, it's you ever do that? You just, you know, I'm still okay. But once I got that shirt on and them shorts on, it only took about 5 push-ups. And my arms went up, but my middle stayed down. Then I'd raise my middle up. But it was always wanting to go back down. And I started to realize there's more weight right there than I realized. When I was on the floor, I started to realize when I was supposed to do setups, and I'd watch them guys, and they would bring their legs up, and they would touch, you know, this and that. And I realized that I was hurting right in here. And it was like, and it was like I was doing it, but it was like something wrinkling right about here, and it wouldn't let my leg go up no further. And it was just like, I'm doing everything they're doing, but it don't look the way they're doing it. Activity reveals in your life. If I tell you to volunteer for nursery, it's going to reveal how patient you are, how consistent you are, whether you are. Do you understand that in the physical world, that if I want to find out if there's anything wrong with you, the first thing I'm going to do is put you on a treadmill and hook you up to all these probes. We're going to test you out. Well, just check me out, doc. Don't I look good? No, that ain't how we're going to figure it out. We're going to put all these little probes on you and get on this treadmill. That's how I knew I needed to start working out. Because you know what? They did all that and I was pumped, man. This one guy was a cop, had been in there right before me. And you know, he'd run on that treadmill for about 20 minutes before he got in his zone. Because they shut it off automatically, nurses do, when it hits like 150 or 160, something like that. When it hits that, it automatically, the machine shuts off. And I said, okay, man, it won't be too bad. I can handle this. They hooked me up, man. It took 20 minutes to hook me up. They got me on that thing. And Doc just said, you just start running, and when it gets to that point, and that'll test how far. 2.5 minutes later. I was thankful that thing shut off. I was praying it would shut off. Just please shut off. Because I was already pouring sweat. How long have I gone? 1 minute. Y'all got this thing tilted. It's not even tilted, or it's flat. You just, all you got to do is run. If the wheel is moving, all you got to do is kick your legs up. You don't even have to do anything. But it only took about 2.5 minutes for my heart rate to go from about 90 to 160. And I knew by my activity, and the doctor knew by my activity, he didn't have to do no more. He carried me in the office. He said, how long you want to live? He wasn't joking no more. How long do you want to live? How far you want to go? It's a rate you're doing. What you do is your job, and how you're a pastor and all this, and the stress you have to deal with, I give you about 5 to 7 years. If you don't change the way you eat and change your activity level and change your intensity and change this, you'll be dead. Or you'll have a stroke and won't be able to do anything. He wasn't lying. He wasn't joking. He was telling me, he was saying, I, through the activity of your life, can tell you where you are. And if I had to tell you to sit down and tell me what you do in the church right now, through your unity, through your intensity, through your activity, what would the results tell? Are you strong? Vibrant? Or do you just have a heartbeat? Too many people that go to church every single Sunday are not servants. They don't have the heart for it. They don't have the heart for it. And when I say that, I don't mean they didn't get saved and God gave them a new heart. I mean they're not conditioned, they're not spiritually strong enough to handle the intensity and the activity that goes along with dealing with people and dealing with situations and dealing with circumstances and not getting upset, grumbling, complaining, quitting, moaning, groaning. They can't go very long before they see the bad instead of the good. One little thing go wrong and they think the whole world's in. Guess what? You learn to work with people long enough, you'll find there'll be a lot more than one little thing that'll go wrong. It's an everyday adventure. When that phone rings every morning and I got 8 messages waiting for me every time I walk in the office, I just sometimes want to say, okay, God, what are we going to find today? But here's the key, number 4. It eventually and truly will determine your spiritual potential. If my unity is right, if my intensity is right, if my activity is right, it always determines my potential. When you ever see these guys running races, you ever see them? I was watching yesterday, they had on television, I was up here, and I might even turn the one on out to the gym and when I was taking a break from shoveling rocks. And when I did, I walked in and sat down, and they had on the triathlon that they had in Hawaii. And it's one of the hottest areas to run a triathlon. I mean, it's just nothing but lava rocks, and they're running on this asphalt, and it is intense heat. All they do is they got guys, they take sponges and they'll shove them in their shirts. And as they're running, they just squeeze them and suck on them, and they're constantly and just going through sponges stuck inside their shirts. And these guys, as they're running, are constantly doing this. And they'll get next to a guy, and I'll think to myself, well, turn it on. Man, turn it on and pass that guy. But see, now that I run a little bit, I understand something. You can't turn it on. Your body determines what it's able to do. And I wish I could have got the clip from yesterday because this one guy that was leading the race all the way up to the 14th mile of the marathon, of a triathlon. He was ahead swimming. He was ahead bicycling. He got 14 miles out of the whole 23 miles that he had to run. And when he got down to the last 10 miles, his body couldn't do it. And there, instinctively, he was slowing down. One guy passed him, and you could see it in his eyes, like, come on. And he'd hold his side, and it was just, his body was saying, there's no more here. And the announcer on there said it, because this is the third time he's led the race and not been able to win it. And the announcer said it, and it almost made me want to cry. He said, maybe what's happening is he's finally hit the threshold of what that body can do. That hit me. It don't matter how much he trains, how much he does, how much he goes, that's the limit of what that body can do. Those legs, those knees, those muscles cannot do anymore. Now he finished the race third or fourth. He can finish, he can do, but he will never set the pace with his body to be able to do more. And he wouldn't have known it unless he had tried it and tried it and tried it, and the problem reveals the potential. Those rocks out there yesterday determines my potential. Am I a quitter? Because the whole fact is, nobody could see them. In fact, there was probably about 12 times I got to it where I had gotten a certain section. I said, well, they can pull the front part of the bus up and we'll come back later with a tractor and fix it. You ever get to starting something and think, well, somebody else can take it over from here? You ever have those thoughts? Well, I mean, I've done this long enough. Somebody else. But what it's doing is it's determining your potential. Maybe your spiritual ability is being pushed as far as it can, and until you increase the intensity and the activity, your potential cannot go any further. I wrote this phrase down and I want you to think about it. What do you have the possibility of becoming? You know what? That's what potential means. The definition of potential is the possibility of becoming. When you look at your life, what do you have the possibility of becoming? When you look at your activity level, when you look at your intensity level, what do you have the potential? Because I meet people all the time and say, I can't do that. And they're right. They can't. I ain't no way I'm going to do that. You're right. What you're doing is revealing through your activity level and through the intensity of your life, you're determining the potential of what you have the ability to become. And here's the funny thing. God doesn't put the limit on you. Now, in the physical world, I don't care how much I work out, I'm not going to be as skinny as Elise. When I went on my 40-day fast, I still barely broke 190-something. So that means I would die somewhere at about 180. Even if I just died of starvation, I'd be 180 pounds. My body has just such potential in it. But my spiritual body is not limited. It's not limited by sickness. It's not limited by difficulty. It's not limited by my trials. I can serve at the very highest level, way beyond what my body says it can do. You say, Pastor, is that real? Jesus is our example. That even when His body has taken all it can take, and even when His physical can take no more, His spiritual can still look down and say, Lord, forgive them. He can still look over at a thief that a few hours earlier had cussed him and told him to come off the cross. And when he finally repents and says to the other thief, don't bother him. He hasn't done anything wrong. Jesus has the spiritual capacity to look over at him and say, today, you'll be with me in paradise. See, my spiritual doesn't have any limitations unless I put them there. That's why Jesus looked at His disciples and He boldly made this proclamation. He said, greater things will you do than I've done because I go to the Father. Think of that. You know, Jesus said, guys, there's no limit to the potential in you. There's no limit to your potential if you pray, if you work, if you're active, if you're intense, if you love me with all of your heart, soul, and mind, and strength, you love your neighbor as yourself, there's no limit to what you can become and be in this life. Every one of us that sits in this room, we have to determine in our life what's our potential. This is the way I feel today. I have no idea what my potential is. I haven't reached it yet. I hadn't got there yet. Every hill that's been put in front of me, I've been able to go over. That's not bragging. It's just I've been able to go over it spiritually. Oh, there's a lot of times physically over on Monday mornings, I quit. I quit a lot of days. I've quit being y'all's pastor so many times, I just laugh at it now. I quit. I'll go get a job. Quit this. But spiritually, I've yet to find a place where God's not stronger than any problem that's ever come against me. And I got a funny feeling I'll never have a problem that will be stronger than my spiritual potential. Art and Grace, I know right now physically dealing with your mom and dad and dealing physically, it's all. But spiritually, you don't cap out in that. When you're weak, He makes you strong. The trial determines our spiritual capacity. I see people every day carrying babies that, and I guess this one sticks with me more than anything else. And I'll say this in close for this time. When I was 9 and 10 years old, one of the most unique couples that ever touched my life, they didn't know it, but they lived about 2 doors down from us. They had a what they called then, I don't know the correct sign, but it was a mongoloid daughter. She was just totally incapacitated. Is that the right? And I didn't understand what that meant at 9 and 10 years old. All I knew was that this older couple, they had this 20-something-year-old daughter that stayed in a hospital bed every day of her life. Her bones were twisted. Her body was twisted. She ate baby food every day and still wore a diaper. And I would see this older man, 60-year-old man, pick up this little daughter and carry her and set her on the porch. I would see him pick her back up and just barely able to lift her, carry her, put her back in the bed. And I used to think to myself, how in the world do you deal with that? Never said a word. The child will never speak. The child will never go to the bathroom. But here this young couple of 60 years old still sat there every day, wiping her mouth, changing her diapers, speaking to her, rubbing her head, just talking to her, just the sweetest you'd ever hear. And I thought to myself, physically you got to get tired of that. You've got to get tired. But let the weak say that I'm strong. Because greater is He that's in me than he that's in this world. Guys, listen to me. There is more potential in you spiritually than you give yourself credit for. Maybe physically you got handicaps. My dad had a speech impediment. That bothered him his whole ministry. He'll still say, I can't say it the way Tim says it. Tim can say it. And we've looked for places in our lives and things in our lives, or somebody did us wrong, or something didn't work out right, and we say, that's the reason. But you listen to me. None of it, none of it limits your spiritual capacity. You want to know how simple it is? At the end of the story, there's a sad story. Micah, Saul's daughter, who David married, sees David down there dancing and carrying on and giving all he's got. Intense. Active. And she looks at him and says, boy, you sure showed yourself off today. You sure showed yourself a king. But see, that was the part she didn't understand. Is that when it comes to him, I'm a servant. I'm not the king. I may be the king, I may be the father, I may be the mom, I may be the worker, I may be all this, but when I'm in His presence, I'm the servant. Because Micah didn't understand that, the Bible says God shut up her womb and she never had a child. She lived barren the rest of her life because it wasn't a physical problem. It was a spiritual one. Guys, if you're serving and working for God and doing for God, it's not a physical problem. It's because I have a unity problem. I have a tenacity problem. I have an activity problem. I got enough activities, I ain't got time. And I don't see my potential of what God can do with me. Will you stand?
if you're in this place today, there's no doubt that you are called to serve. In fact, the reason you're not happy is because you don't serve. You were made to serve. But now the level of that service is all determined by the heart. Is it beating at all? Is it doing good when it only beats at a real slow pace? You don't have to get too much, because too much would give me a heart attack. Can it handle the intensity, the activity of God saying, I need you to fill this void? I need you to shovel some rocks today. Can you handle it without having a heart attack? It would have been sad to drive up last night and at least be pulling that bus in and be laying on them rocks. He died trying. No, I knew my potential. When Johnny had said, that's a lot of rocks. In my mind, I knew, I can do that. It'll take a while, but I can do that. Some of you in this room, you may not be the best servants yet, you may not be the best at it yet, but you can do it. It may take a while. You just got to learn how to serve. Because you got potential. Every one of you in this room has potential. And in the spiritual world, you got unlimited potential. Unlimited. But it has to start somewhere. For me, it started on a treadmill for 2.5 minutes when the doctor said, how long do you want to live? Spiritually, it started a long time ago when God said, Tim, how do you want to live? For you, it may start right now. With God saying, what do you really want to do and be? Will you bow your heads? Father,